It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
I want to stress from the outset that this pandemic is far from over.
This is all about trust now and personal responsibility and just being careful and not being selfish.
We need people to have faith that this vaccine is safe and that they should take it.
The idea of an irreversible move was taken off the table. You can't do that when you have no idea where the virus is going to go.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Roger Hearing.
And good afternoon, I'm Caroline Hepke. Well, the government is changing self-isolation rules. Some employees in England can now switch quarantine for daily testing instead. People who are deemed critical workers in key sectors, including the food supply chain, will no longer need to isolate at home for as many as 10 days if they come into contact with a positive COVID case.
Well, companies in 16 other industries are also now being allowed to apply for named double vaccinated workers to be exempted.
At the same time, researchers at the University of Oxford say that daily COVID-19 testing is just as effective as self-isolation in controlling transmission in schools. The results could well fuel calls for the government to rethink its containment strategy.
So lots of changes and ideas about how to tackle the surge in virus cases, which we're seeing at the moment. But one of the most controversial approaches the government is lining up is the introduction of vaccine passports, proof of vaccination for entry to nightclubs, perhaps pubs and bars from September. It's a policy already approved in Italy and it's being considered in France, and it could yet be something you need to enter other countries. It also opens the argument about compulsory vaccination for care home or health workers. For some, it's a logical way to encourage people, especially young people, to get vaccinated and help the safety of those meeting closely together indoors. For others, it's a worrying form of intrusion and putting unethical pressure on those who don't want to or can't be vaccinated. And then, of course, there are the practicalities of processing digital passports. Well, that's the subject of our special programme today. And joining us now, very pleased to say, is Tom Sass, who's Associate Director at the Institute for Government. Tom, welcome and thanks for being with us. First off, the big question, I suppose, what would vaccine passports involve and how would it work?
So, thanks, Roger. What the government seems to be proposing at the moment, the big caveat that we have to put over the whole of this is there's still some uncertainty about how serious the government is about this proposal. Some people think it's more of a threat to try and boost vaccine uptake and are unsure of whether it will actually happen in reality once we get to the autumn. But what the government is proposing at the moment is to use these COVID passports, vaccine passports, upon entry to what they, in the slight jargony term in Parliament in the House yesterday, called large unstructured or large structured events. So that could be sports matches, that could be concerts, gigs, that could indeed be political party conferences, which are both sort of coming up now with plans in September. What's unclear at the moment is exactly how far that would extend. Would this go to kind of a bar holding a gig with 100 people, say? That's not clear at the moment. So how they would work, you sort of trailed this a little bit in your introduction. There's different ways, different countries have implemented different types of schemes, some more sophisticated, an app on a phone, others a bit less so, sort of someone downloading essentially a form off a government website. But that basically needs to be checked, that needs to be verified upon entry. And then people with that documentation can then gain entry, and those without it can't. And that's where the real controversy comes in.
Yes. So, as you say, it's been floated as an idea, meant to not come in until the end of September, so a couple of months. Is there a way of making it work, though? I mean, how would it practically operate, as you say, for nightclubs, for pubs? I mean, is there any word yet on whether it would be an app or whether it would be a piece of paper in the UK? Or are we not even that far yet in Britain?
So we've sort of got various signs out of government, but what we've yet to get is actually a very clear statement of what the intent is, how it would work, and actually the case for doing that. I think that's why one of the reasons there's so much uncertainty and so little confidence in this scheme at the moment. But from the signs that we have got, the UK would be going down an app route. They sort of suggested that it would be integrated into the NHS app. It doesn't seem, as was sort of earlier, as was trailed in the original roadmap back in February, that they're now considering pubs. I would say that's a very good thing. There's a lot of evidence from around the world which suggests that pubs and bars are just not able to enforce this in any way that's at all safe. I think the interesting thing, though, in sort of making the case for this, when this was floated back in February, this was very much seen in the government's roadmap as a way to help release other restrictions. You know, you could release more restrictions if you could make it safer for people to gather using these passports. Now it's being talked about in a very, very different context in terms of boosting vaccine uptake among the young. And, you know, to be fair, we're seeing some quite concerning figures. Around a third of young adults, that's those under 30, haven't got their first dose at all, despite having, you know, the option to do so. But I think the government really needs to make a very strong case here that these COVID passports are actually the best way of doing that job of boosting uptake. A lot of scientists would argue that actually there's lots of other ways you can build vaccine confidence. They need to be doing more to reach those younger audiences, to find ways of encouraging them, making it worth it. But actually using this kind of quite big stick, and actually this is quite a big change to move from what's been a voluntary approach and saying, you know, up to you, your choice, to really starting to quite force people into doing this. And I think that's where it's very controversial.
Well, is this actually a good idea, Tom, in the sense that it could help to protect venues and businesses and perhaps actually give people more confidence to go out?
Potentially. I mean, I think the big uncertainty here, we haven't seen the results of the sort of big pilot study that the government did. So you might remember that there was various sort of music venues, sports venues that got asked to sort of pilot this through the spring. I think there is a chance that this could work reasonably well in some very large venues. You'll notice that sort of some sports stadiums have said that actually they could do this quite well. They've already got people checking tickets on the doors. They've got scanners. They've got security staff, relatively easy to implement. Perhaps some people would feel a bit more safe going to a large venue like that if such a scheme was in place. I think where you haven't got that sort of same level of confidence is in the much wider range of smaller venues. So I think what we've seen in other countries is if you ask, you know, a small bar with a sort of limited workforce, you know, pretty cash-strapped at the moment to try and implement one of these schemes, then perhaps they just implement it very poorly. They don't really check people very carefully. And, I mean, firstly, that's not going to do much in terms of controlling transmission. You know, that's going to make things potentially sort of worse. But also, I think all this uncertainty around exactly who this is going to apply to is actually pretty unfair on businesses. You know, they've had a really tough time over the last year. Some of them have just been able to reopen. You look at nightclubs, and now they're sort of faced with this additional uncertainty about what it means, and that makes it very difficult for them to plan.
And I suppose also there is this issue about the law in all this, the extent of the government intruding further. We've got very used to it, of course, over the last 18 months. But a sense that, you know, the government legislating in effect to say, I suppose perhaps you need a mobile phone to have the app even to get into somewhere, or that you are, by what you have or haven't voluntarily done as a member of the community, will allow you to get or not to get access to certain services. I mean, this is a worrying area, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's right. And I think the big sort of question mark over this is, does the government actually have the vote, at least on its own side of the House, to get this through? You've seen 40 Conservative MPs signing the sort of Big Brother Watch opposition to this, very concerned about the civil liberties angle, about, you know, forcing people to do something that they might not be happy to do. And, you know, I think it does mark a very big change from, you know, essentially saying, you know, this is a positive story around, you know, the success of the vaccine rollout and encouraging everyone to get it, to a much more forceful approach that some people are concerned about.
Hmm. Well, I mean, and also there's a question mark about whether there would be a full parliamentary vote, isn't there, on this issue, or whether it would be simply the notion of the passport. Exactly what parliamentarians are going to have to vote on is perhaps still in doubt, isn't it?
That's right. So Kwasi Kwarteng, the business secretary, was pushed on this a bit in the House yesterday and seemed to be saying that they wouldn't sort of necessarily bring forward a sort of a vote on a specific measure, but rather a more general measure, and sort of thought that he was sort of seemed to be confident that they could get that through. But, you know, other people are less sure. And I think what we're seeing at the moment, more generally with the government's COVID policy, you think of the fact that Boris Johnson is sort of having to release all these restrictions, but sort of seeming a bit nervous about the scale of the surge that we have here, is that actually the government's quite boxed in. They've got a large group of backbenchers who are just not happy to see any more restrictions, but also don't want to see something like this, you know, COVID passports come in either. So the government will be under quite a lot of pressure, if it is indeed serious about this scheme, to come out with a very strong argument and the evidence to support why it needs to happen.
And Tom, there are people who say this is just an ID card by the back door. Is there reason to be concerned for those who are opposed to that?
Yeah, it's interesting, Roger. I mean, so we've seen actually in other countries, I think that Singapore was an example of this, where sort of some of the data that was handed over specifically for a sort of COVID purpose, whether that was contact tracing or other things, was then used by the government for other things, you know, and it was sort of taken on and just, you know, they actually saw this as a way to develop a more powerful system of tracking what people were doing and using their health information in different ways. I think people are right to be concerned about that. You know, if you are going to propose this, then it should be argued on the merit, the narrow merits of sort of what you want to do. Well, I think we've seen other people more on the sort of digital side of things, looking at this as a sort of wedge to get the UK moving much more in a digital ID direction. And I think if that's what they want, then they should make the argument clearly for that and not use this as a kind of Trojan horse.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum, powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
But what are the ethical issues surrounding vaccine passports? Many people are horrified about what they see as an assault on individual liberty and a form of ID card, possibly by the back door. Well, joining us now is Simon Colstow, Senior Lecturer and University Ethics Advisor at the University of Portsmouth, who chairs research ethics committees for the NHS, Ministry of Defence and Public Health England. Simon, thanks for being with us today. First of all, just lay out what you think are the ethical issues in this whole process of possibly bringing in vaccine passports.
Okay, so I think, and as I've been arguing elsewhere, there's two really important issues. The first thing is whether or not there's going to be fairness to these passports. And I think in order for these passports to be fair, everyone who would be eligible to get one would also need to be eligible for the vaccine. Now, in a country like the United Kingdom, where all adults are able to get a vaccination, that condition seems to be met. But obviously, if you look internationally, there's a lot of people who don't yet have access to the vaccine. So I think this issue of fairness is critically important. The second part of that is there may be people who, for medical reasons, are not able to get the vaccine. So there will have to be some sort of exemption for those people as well. But I think as long as those two conditions are met, there seems to be very strong arguments for operating some form of vaccine passport system.
Yes, OK. So I was going to say, how do you weigh those concerns with simply the extraordinary threat from COVID? I mean, how can you mitigate what would be a small group of people, surely, versus a much larger majority?
OK, so I think there are plenty of issues in society that we need to take stands on. And there's lots of things going on in the world today that I think it's very important for citizens to really question government and sort of say, is this really the right way to go? But as far as vaccine passports go, if you look at the incredible problems and incredible danger that's been caused by COVID over the last couple of years, and then you look at the extreme safety of the vaccines and the way that we've now got really solid evidence how vaccination is preventing COVID deaths and really protecting the population, I don't think making a stand on vaccine passports is the sort of place to focus efforts. I think vaccine passports seem to be a very sensible public health intervention. And thus, if people want to sort of have their voices heard and put their effort into campaigning about something, I really don't think vaccine passports are the place to do that.
Well, yes, but the point surely in all this, Simon, though, is that our whole medical system is based on an idea of being voluntary, of being people not being given things they don't want, not being given treatments they don't want. And you could construe this as being a form of coercion. I mean, you're not saying people have to have the vaccine, but there's a whole series of things, of services you can't access if you don't. That seems like coercion. And it's actually quite a small step between that, perhaps, and actually making vaccines compulsory in certain circumstances. And that seems to cross a lot of medical boundaries.
Again, I think it's very important to just take a step back and look in the wider context. You take safety interventions. We're very used to having to being coerced into wearing seatbelts, for instance, when we drive cars. We do lots of things every day where we obey the laws that society puts in place in order to keep us safe. And I think vaccines are very much within that sort of category of things. If vaccinations, yes, of course they protect individuals, but they're about protecting society as well. And I think because of this argument that vaccinations are very much there to protect all of us, it falls far more within the category of the sorts of laws around things like seatbelts than it does of more sort of individual health type arguments.
But don't you think also the ethics of this are very much more in the weeds and more difficult to find, in the sense that if the technology, you know, is on your phone, that has a lot of data ramifications, and that those issues around how that data, you know, is used, stored, for example, those can be very difficult, quite subtle decisions on ethics that can be pretty challenging.
Oh, absolutely. And this is where ethics is a very interesting area, because the devil is often very much in the detail. So if you take the sort of broader questions, whether or not a sort of vaccine passport type system can be justified and broadly is ethical, I think there's very strong arguments for implementing such a system. However, the details of the implementation, whether or not apps are involved, what data is carried about people, how you show that vaccine statement, that's very much to do with the details. And of course, things can go very wrong if it's implemented in a very poor way. But I think very broadly speaking, all of us, we have rights within society, and with rights come responsibilities. And I think something like the vaccine passport is very much a responsibility we have to protect others within society. But of course, how that's implemented, then that can cause all sorts of additional issues.
So in a very brief sense and a few words, what you're saying is that the collective rights effectively outweigh the individual rights in this case.
I don't think it's quite that simple. I think we have, as citizens, we clearly have rights, and the flip side to rights always come responsibilities. And I think something like a vaccine passport and getting vaccinated is very much a responsibility we have if we want to live within a society. And I think, I'm very happy to be vaccinated, and I don't view being vaccinated as impinging my rights at all. So I view it far more as a responsibility than a right, per se.
Simon, thank you so much for joining us. Really interesting. Simon Colstow is the Senior Lecturer and University Ethics Advisor at the University of Portsmouth, who chairs a lot of research ethics committees, for example, for the NHS. So our thanks to him in terms of delving into the ethical issues. But what about the practicalities? Nightclubs were allowed to reopen in England just on Monday after being closed for 16 months. Within days, this idea of vaccine passport strategy was announced, only for nightclubs, not for pubs or other late night venues, it would seem. The government says also that a couple of months' notice is enough for the industry to be organised and for over 18s to get a jab. Joining us now is Peter Marks, the CEO of Recom UK, which owns more than 40 nightclub venues. Peter, good morning. Thanks for being with us. We spoke to you Monday. You were delighted about reopening. What do you think about vaccine passports?
Yes, the delight lasted about another 3 hours until I got the news that we were, after all, going to be given vaccine passports, despite the fact that 2 weeks earlier I'd received notification from the government that they weren't going to require it of anybody for a whole host of reasons that were well considered. And in fact, I've been at meetings with government ministers, including Paul Scully, Oliver Dowd and Michael Gove, to put the case that it would be very unfair. And then it's even more unfair than I could ever in my wildest dreams imagined, because it's only nightclubs, crackers.
Well, on that basis, Peter, I mean, I guess you're having to think about, as many of your places are having to think about, the practicality of doing it. I mean, what are you going to do? Have a scanner there at the entrance? Is that the way forward?
Well, let's be straight here. The problem for me isn't actually the practicalities of having vaccine passports, because we have door supervisors, many of them, unlike other areas of hospitality, because that comes with the territory for us. And so it's not difficult to check. The issue, of course, is that we believe that this is wholly about messaging. And, you know, frankly, it's hugely unfair, because what's the difference between a nightclub at midnight and a pub at midnight in a town centre? I'm not talking about a nice pub in the middle of the Cotswolds with roses around the door, of course. But, there are pubs packed to the rafters. They have dancing. It's exactly the same for them. And I'm not trying to drag them back into this. The scientific way of dealing with this is through risk assessment. I've spoken to lawyers and scientists over the last few days, and they're all of the same opinion that what you need to do is do a risk assessment in any premise, and whether that's a restaurant or a nightclub or a cinema, and you work out how to minimise the risk. And the thing that we have, better than anybody else, is ventilation by the bucket load. We change our air every 4 or 5 minutes, and the messaging is coming out increasingly from even the government scientists saying ventilation is important. And so we're thinking, how does this work?
Well, won't vaccine passports, though, make it safer for your customers, drive business, in fact?
Well, the answer is maybe, because, of course, I don't know whether the majority of young people will get vaccinated or not, because I've had lots of inbound messages saying, I'm glad you're not insisting on vaccine passports, thank you, but I don't know whether they're the vocal tiny majority or whether they represent a larger part. But I was speaking to another operator of a national bar chain. They've got, I think, 70, 80 bars. And he said that they've done a straw poll of their staff, and over 30% of those staff don't want the vaccine, and see this as an infringement of their liberties. And they believe that there isn't the case for them to have it. And as long as others are protected, they feel that it's not worth the risk. And of course, some of this is ridiculous conspiracy theory stuff, but others are based on what scientists themselves were saying, you know, only 6 months ago. And so you then start thinking, well, if that number is as much as 30% and they're the staff, you know, what could it be? And the answer is, of course, I don't know. But what I'd like to see happen is for government to encourage people to have the vaccine that are younger, and maybe use social media influencers or celebrities or whatever they feel is the right way forward to try and encourage. But at the moment, it could well be everyone says, stuff it, I'm not going to the club next door, we need a vaccine passport, let's all stay here in Wetherspoons.
Well, all right, briefly, Peter, do you actually think it's going to happen? Is it just a scare? I mean, very briefly, is it really going to happen?
Do you know, I don't know, but I'm thinking, I bet you it won't be as straightforward as we think it is when we get to the end of September.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.